Hi, this is Mark Wade, writer of Daredevil, and you're listening to Longbox Heroes.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Longbox Heroes, episode 358. I'm Todd, joined with Joe. How are we doing today, Joe?
I'm doing good, Todd. My favorite part of every other episode
is me doing the intro?
Absolutely.
Oh, my goodness. It's always flawless, always amazing, fact-filled, laughs, people cry. Give me the Oscar.
Always on point, as they say.
I am a pointy guy, they say.
That's right. On fleek is another thing that people say.
Is that really a thing people say?
Not people that I associate with, but I've heard that it's a thing that people say.
Oh, well, you'll have to explain fleek to me someday.
Todd, I don't know what it means.
You know everything, Joe. You're like the guy on the show here.
I hear people say things, and I'm just like, there you go. All right, moving on.
Wow, that makes me sad. I thought you knew everything.
No.
Oh, my God, you just busted my balloon. My Sposto balloon is everywhere.
Well, I'm sorry it took you this long to figure out that I'm just skating by. Not on my good looks, just skating by.
Oh, I think you're skating by on good looks, I'll tell you the truth.
That's how I've gotten so far in this life.
And people are like, that's a mighty pretty visage right there.
Good Lord. So what do we got to discuss this week, my good man?
We got streaming services buying comic properties, the territories and their awards, creators getting rights to their characters, and a creator confirming the reason a book was canceled? Also, con news, free digital books and sales. What we read last week, which was Generations Hulk. You have Jesse Jones, but it's Jessica Jones, number 11, and Wasp, number 8. Also, what we're looking forward to this week. And Todd and Joe have issues, which is Birds of Prey, number 8. And I don't think we have any TV talk yet, right?
No TV talk yet, correct. You want to do the notes?
What notes?
I said, do you want to do the notes? Critiquing my misspellings?
There's question marks and misspellings. I always like when I tweak you, your answer is always, do you want to do it? Which the answer will always be, no, I don't want to do it.
And don't you have some needling to do on me about football or some garbage?
Yeah. Do you want me to do that now or later?
Nah, save it for the end.
All right. Good thing you reminded me. I almost forgot about the football needling.
Uh-huh.
It's not needling so much as a questionnaire.
Mm-hmm. Is this just to embarrass me?
No, I got a football question. That's what she... Come on, relax, big guy.
Question under protest, but two I won't sit still for.
Is that something I should understand?
There's, have you ever heard or seen any of the commercials, or more specifically the outtakes for commercials that Raymond Burr did toward the end of his life?
Oh, when he was doing the We'll Sell No Wine Before It's Time?
Yes.
I love those commercials.
there's one, like, very famous, and you've heard the Casey Kasem ones as well, maybe?
Oh, yeah, when he's talking about a dog dying.
Right,
those
right.
Were the commercials.
Okay. So the Raymond Burr one, the guy asks for a second take on something. And he says, why? I did it perfectly. What's the problem? And the guy says, I heard a noise or a gonk outside. And he goes, a gonk outside. And he says, he goes, one take I'll do, but two I won't sit still for. Who are you anyway? And he says, I'm the engineer. The engineer, huh? And then you hear him take a big swig off something. And he goes, can I speak with Mrs. Rogers, please? And that's the end of the take.
That's a great take. Is there anything like the Larry Fine does?
Yes. But this one is real, but similar to the Larry Fine Woodstock tape.
Right.
Yes. But I'm a big fan of the Casey Kasem ones, Raymond Burr.
My favorite might be that I've ever heard is the John Wayne one.
Oh, I've never heard the John Wayne one.
The
this
ridiculous.
Is not after, this is a preview of what After Dark is like, ladies and gentlemen. We're going to get a comic book talk shortly, I promise.
Where he says, what is it? But I think you've heard, it's probably been on Stern when he talks about being regosh darn ridiculous. But he uses, like, the jiggy.
They never play the full clip.
Right.
They just play that part.
I know. I love that. I love that when he's like, you gotta be. And he's just obviously slurring his words. Because, you know, he probably has, from filming in those radioactive-filled bomb testing places out in the desert.
Right.
You know, he wasn't feeling so well.
There's a good one of Gerald Ford talking to his tailor. You ever hear those ones?
No.
How he needs pants that he could take in or let out because he fluctuates in his weight wildly.
Right.
And also he needs extra room in the pockets for his knife.
Oh my goodness.
It was the president, ladies and gentlemen.
Are these leftover Nixon tapes?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Oh my goodness. So let's get into the news here, Todd.
Okay.
All right. So Netflix and all these streaming services are going crazy trying to get whatever properties they can. Now, this came out before the news that Disney is not renewing their deal with Netflix. But the Netflix is purchasing the Millar World stuff, excluding right. Kingsman and Kick-Ass.
Which, you know, maybe they would have bought if they weren't already, you know, he hadn't sold the rights to the movies already.
So. Right.
I mean, that's existing, so I get it, but wonder if we'll get a Wanted TV show now.
And Superior, maybe.
Ooh, and our MPH.
Did that ever finish?
You know what? I don't know. I was trying it, and then it seemed like it was late, and then away it went.
So I tip my hat to Netflix for picking up a property like this. Hawk? Remember Hawk?
Yes, and he also might do Jupiter's Legacy.
Right,
know.
There you go.
He's got a lot of work. And what was the one?
Starlight?
Yep, the Flash Gordon ripoff.
Mm-hmm. Now the one for me that I would be super interested in would be Nemesis.
The Batman pastiche.
Right, remember that one?
Yep.
I think we've reviewed that on the show many, 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 many moons ago.
Many shows ago, I think.
Right. Well, it might have been at least one show ago.
Right. I forget how many regenerations it's been.
Mm-hmm. Not as many as that kid Jack on Twitter.
Okay.
No one who listens to this will get that, but that's okay. Maybe they will. Who knows? But, hey, this is interesting. This is really cool. Mark Millar is more or less the modern-day Stan Lee, so... Mm-hmm. If this is how Netflix becomes, you know, remember last week we talked about Valiant making their push to be number three.
Right, which I still think you're crazy on, but go ahead.
Okay, but I'm talking one and two, and then a gap, and then three, right? Everybody's scrambling for three. One and two are duking it out amongst each other. Everybody else is duking it out for three.
Right.
This is a play to make Netflix and in turn Millarverse, Millar World, three. By having this sort of deal with something or someone like Netflix.
Do you mean in comics?
In everything.
Okay, because I think you like when you keep saying three.
Yeah,
I keep throwing Image in there as maybe not one and two, but the gap ain't big as you say, and then the gap between three and four is huge.
So you
because
think, you think keep Image is cemented at number three.
Yes, just because. Are you ready for Skybound and Walking Dead?
Okay.
Boom! Right there. Between the TV show and the merchandise, you're talking about getting to three with Millar World. How are we not factoring in Walking Dead to make Image a solid number three?
Let's say this. You mentioned Skybound.
Mm-hmm.
Robert Kirkman's deal. He's got Walking Dead, he's got Outcast, he's got Invincible. Robert Kirkman's a big enough name and a big enough of a powerhouse that he could just technically up and leave Image.
Yep.
So, if that happens, and okay, I'll give you that. With Skybound as piece of the puzzle, Image, all right, they're number three.
Mm-hmm.
Skybound leaves. Is Skybound on its own now number three? Or now does everything get closer?
As Skybound keeps Walking Dead, Skybound becomes number three and Image becomes number four.
Okay.
The gap now is closer between four and five, but it's still bigger than you think because those Valiant books don't sell anything in the store.
Well, I didn't have my video on. You didn't see how big that was.
Mm-hmm.
When I was doing it with my hands, the gap.
Oh, okay. You have a tape measure so you can show me?
It could be like from here to here.
Oh, I don't have you up.
Oh, that's okay.
Did you actually put the camera on?
No.
Okay, because I had my notes up, my show prep.
Right, we're off script, ladies and gentlemen.
But yes. No, we're talking about threes and fours. I'm fine with that.
And I hear what you're saying, that Valiant doesn't sell well in your shop, in our shop. But it sells enough that it continuously gets printed, continuously gets rebooted. It has big-name creators there doing work on these properties. And these properties obviously mean something.
Right. I'm not saying they don't mean anything.
Okay, go ahead.
I honestly think you think they are bigger than they are. I really, and I'm not saying that they don't sell at all, but I don't know if it's just I've been there too long, but the shop that we go to, I look as a microcosm.
Right.
I do believe that our shop is a bigger shop, just times whatever that sells by 10, and a smaller shop, you know, divide, if that makes any sense.
It does.
So I do believe that if you take the numbers that like Image is selling of certain books and you cut, it's all going to be the same at other shops. And just ask questions at the shop about numbers. And I think you'll see, it'll shock you how little Valiant sells in the shop. Like how, like ridiculously how small Valiant sells.
Okay. Let me put it to you this way. Brand awareness.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about your Skybound books.
Mm-hmm.
Books that are currently being published by Image. I could name as many books published by Valiant as I can published by Image. And that means their properties have more penetration than most Image properties. Or just as much as.
Yes, but just because the name recognition is fantastic, that don't mean that they're selling. Like
that's true.
Do you know what I mean? That's like saying the Monkees are a well-known name, so I'm going to put all my money in Monkey stock. You know, like it doesn't mean anything. I don't know how their album would sell right now. Do you know what I'm trying to say? So like Valiant is living off the shooter years in recognition.
Mm-hmm.
And you do have some big creators, but that doesn't, I'd like to see how that equals in how many people are reading the books.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
But I think just the fact that there's more overseas money actively making Hollywood projects out of Valiant stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They have a bigger profile than we are led to believe by the sales of our store.
Right. Well, I know there's a lot of stuff in the works, mm-hmm. but where is the Valiant product outside of the comics?
Being made. In the last week, they've already talked about casting and scripts mm-hmm. and things like that, which is, you know, further along than other stuff has been. But, you know, all it takes is one bald roll and the momentum will go. I'm trying to be positive with all this.
Right, and I'm not trying to be negative. I'm just saying...
You're being a realist.
Yeah, I'm looking at Image, and I'm looking at the upside on Image as higher than the upside on Valiant. As much as, like, you want to say they're working into these, like, we're going to get a Rye movie or a Blood, what was the Blood guy?
Bloodshot.
Bloodshot. We're going to get a Bloodshot movie. We're going to get a Ninjak movie. We're going to get all this. Yeah, maybe when it comes out, but it's always going to be, I don't care how big Ninjak or something gets. It's in the world of superheroes. The playing field is not level. It's going to be Marvel superhero and not one and two, Marvel DC Valiant, where I think Image has the uptick. It's that it's more diverse where, you know, it's the people being worn out on superheroes and superhero-esque comic book stuff that, you know, a kill or be killed or a criminal or a saga or something like that. That's all we need is one of them to hit. You know what I mean? And we have more. So you're betting on potential. I'm betting on what I've seen.
Right. And I think if they took properties like a Kill or Be Killed or a Southern Bastards or a Saga or any number of properties at Image, but the problem with that is those, while are published by Image, are not owned by Image. Those are pieces that can be taken out of the Image puzzle, like a Skybound or the Jason Aaron creative work, or the Ed Brubaker creative work, or, you know, whatever it is. And maybe that's why, in my mind, I don't see Image as solid as a number three, because there's all these little pieces that can be taken out.
Right.
Whereas Valiant is Valiant. It's a cohesive universe, they have things set up. Whatever their market penetration may be, they do have a little bit more brand loyalty that they could go and take that to some Hollywood executive or some overseas person, which is what they more than likely did, and sell this to them and say, listen, the shared universe is the big thing. Look at DC with their shared universe, Marvel with their shared universe. Image is a mess. It's all over the place. Dark Horse is a mess. It's all over the place. You've got Magnolia stuff here. You've got that stuff here. They've got all these licensed properties. We are one cohesive unit. When you put a Valiant book out, it is already a built-in shared universe.
That's a pro. That is
right.
A pro.
And I can see that that's what they're selling themselves on. Whereas the Millar stuff, getting back to that.
Yeah, we are all over the place.
It technically is a shared universe, but nary do these things cross over. But Millar's name, I think, is strong enough that all it takes for Netflix to throw a couple extra zeros on there and say it's now a shared universe, and then the Netflix series are all a shared universe.
Right, but with Millar, to me, they throw a couple zeros on it because other than, I don't know how Wanted did, but between Kick-Ass and The Kingsman, like, he's got some stroke now. He made Hollywood some money, which changes everything. You know, like, you're now a tested product. Before, right, you were potential. Now you're tested. So that's where the Millar thing falls in. So, and I don't know so much about Millar being a shared universe. I don't see that at all with any of his works, but that's neither here nor there.
Well, the argument can certainly be made because, like, here's his Batman story, and here's his Superman story, and here's his Flash story, and here's this story, and here's this part of the Superman story that I'm going to tell over here, and here's this Flash Gordon thing. That's all stuff that he could just very easily put out a one-shot or a mini-series or a something, and it just say, it's all connected, and explain how it's all connected.
Okay, but it's not.
No, it's not
in any of the okay.
Right.
I was like,
I
don't know
it's
where
not,
he's getting this from.
But
okay.
It can very easily be made connected.
Okay, you're betting on potential again. Got it.
Right. That's why I'm not a gambler, because I bet on potential.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of betting on potential, so we've talked before about the new influx of books at DC, the Dark Matter stuff that's going to be spinning out of their big event with all the Batman and
the metal
stuff, right? And they've got a bunch of big name creators making new characters or new spins on old things that we haven't seen in quite some time through 52s and new 52s and rebirths and everything else like that. And as these things are getting closer, there's a lot of talk happening that the creators on these books, while allegedly only contracted to do three issues, are going to have ownership and equity in whatever they create in these books.
I'm guessing partial ownership, but...
I would certainly think partial ownership, but this is the first time that this has happened in DC in, I'd say, what, 30 years, maybe?
I don't know what the window is, because I know there is some weird royalty stuff in the 70s/80s, where, like, that's what... kept, remember when they were doing those showcases of DC, like the Suicide Squad ones, and there was the Captain Carrot ones, and some weird royalty rights in there made them, because they were made on the cheap, black and white, and they tried to keep them down to $9.99 for like 500 pages, something ridiculous like that. But I remember Scott Shaw saying that he gets 10% of whatever Captain Carrot makes.
Right. Okay, those were things that were done like back in like the late 60s, early 70s.
I think more like it was, 70s, late 70s, early 80s, like after the Bronze Age started.
Right. And that was, we've talked about this before, that was whoever the editor at DC was.
Right. So some were more lenient than others.
Right. And I wish I could remember who that editor was, and I'm sure someone will tell us. But one of the last things that they did was all the superpowers stuff, like the cartoon and the toys and all that jazz.
Right.
Was they based it all on Jack Kirby, you know, on Jack, like they had Jack Kirby design all the toys and everything.
Right.
So that was like DC's payday to Jack Kirby.
Mm-hmm.
It's like you created all these things and had a hand in all these things that Marvel and never really got a dime.
Right.
And granted, you had really nothing to do with a lot of these DC characters outside of some of the New God stuff. But these specific iterations of the big DC characters, this is our way of thanking you for being Jack Kirby.
Right. And a weird thing is, I want to say it's even later than that that they still did it, because I've heard rumors that I remember Jimmy Palmiotti saying that he has like partial say or rights to Tallulah Black, the female character he created in Jonah Hex.
Mm.
So I don't know if it's like a thing that people, like here or there, they can give it to you depending on who you are. But I've heard rumors of it throughout the 2000s too. So
now,
but
right, so I think this is something we've discussed before on the show. So did he create Tallulah Black in the pages of Jonah Hex?
Yes, he did. Whatever issue it was, I forget the first issue that she was created. And then her story ran through that 2006 run of Jonah Hex.
Right.
And then she was in All-Star Western after the New 52 run.
So that's a good point. So I think you're right. It might have been before the DiDio era. Like, mm-hmm. DiDio might have been the one that kind of stopped all that stuff.
Because in that time, too, I know there weren't a lot of the New 52 run and the DiDio run. You know, as far as I remember, there weren't a lot of, what do they call them, exclusive contracts. Like, they got less.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Which I don't know if that was the upper-ups or whatever, because I know with exclusive contracts, you get insurance and stuff like that. And, you know, granted, if you were, like, a legend, they'd probably give you one. But they were less, you know... enthused about giving out exclusive contracts during the DiDio run.
Right. So it'll be interesting to see what that shakes out to be. Mm-hmm. What sort of NDAs those creators may have had to have signed and for how long. And
right.
Depending on how those books sell, who's going to stay on those books after that alleged three-issue run that they all have.
Right. Which one's going to be the hitman out of Blood... What was it?
Right.
Bloodlines.
So, talking about DC here, getting over to Marvel. So I'm not really sure what prompted this to happen, but Jonathan Hickman recently was doing like a press tour or something.
Right.
And in the discussion of that, he just came right out and said that, quote, "I think it's pretty common knowledge at this point that Marvel isn't publishing the Fantastic Four because of their disagreement with Fox. While it bums me out, I completely understand it, because, well, it's not like they're acting out of cause. Fox needs to do a better job with that property." Where for months and years, Marvel has told us that's not the case.
Right, what has it been, two and a half years since Secret Wars ended?
Well,
almost no, 2 years, maybe?
It was late. It's been like a year and a half. Like this December will be 2 years.
Okay, so it's been 2 years, and I could just hear Marvel, like all the executives just going, as Hickman's saying that, just going, ugh. Like, we've been denying this for 2 years, just around, and this comes out. So, I mean, it's something everyone believed, and they, you know, like Breivert and all the other guys are like, no, you don't understand, this and that. But, you know, more and more, I don't know if it's just, like, the dirt sheets and the innuendo, but I believe it. I wholeheartedly believe it. And hearing a creator, especially the creator who was doing the FF book at the time.
Right.
It was canceled, going, yeah, that's the reason. I don't know. It gives it a little more credence to me.
Right. And Marvel, you know, cited poor sales and, you know, this, that, the other thing. And this is the story we're telling right now or whatever it is.
Can I just say something about Marvel citing poor sales?
Sure.
Yet we get Iron Fist books and, you know, like they'll keep trying this or that and we'll get, you know, Squirrel Girl comics or this or that. And you're like, really, all these sell more than the Fantastic Four? All these like little like side characters that you'll give a book to and you'll give a book to anybody sometimes. FF doesn't sell. That to me, that doesn't wash.
Well, I think what prompted this was because one of the books that got announced with the Marvel Legacy stuff is Marvel 2-in-1, which is, you know, a Thing book. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously we see the Thing popping up here and there. We see Human Torch popping up here and there. We see versions of Mr. Fantastic popping up here and there. No Sue, no...
actual Reed.
Right. No actual Reed, no Valeria, no Franklin, no nothing like that. But we've even discussed here that they're going to announce a Fantastic Four book, part of Legacy. That's the thing that they're teasing. We're going to get it, and we didn't get it.
That's what I think.
And it's still time, but I don't know. It just seems, I don't want to say dishonest,
mm-hmm.
but what does Marvel gain by lying?
I don't know. What does any giant corporation get by lying, Joe?
I guess. You know, it's one of those things where if you just say your narrative enough, then that becomes the truth. But when there's enough people out there who say the truth and you keep holding steadfast to your lie, then I don't know. I think it makes you look bad.
It does, but what do they care? But at this point, it's like they've taken FF stuff off of shirts and, like, literally it's like, oh, here's our Secret War, you know, art. And we have
a replica of the cover from the 80s, yes.
Right, and it's like, oh, but none of the FF characters or any of the X characters. And it's like...
we're going to make extra work for ourselves.
Right, we know they're lying. They know we know they're lying, but they don't care. And do we really care? Like... I don't know. To me, it's just like, we get it. You're going to lie. You're going to stick to the lie. We're going to attack the lie. It's just, it's the motions now. Just give us an FF book and we'll shut up. That's the quickest way to shut us down.
Right. Oh, boy.
I mean, we still don't have a Wolverine book, like with the actual straight up Logan from the X-Men. But anyway, I'm done. I'm not going to keep going off on a tangent.
All right. Last bit of news. Discussion of the Harvey Awards. Alas, no longer part of Baltimore Comic Con. When did comics become a business? Mm. I bring this up, Todd, because I did not know. I should have known. But I did not know that the Harvey Awards were not a Baltimore exclusive.
You know what? Somebody else found that out this week.
Oh, yeah? So it had been at Baltimore for the better part of the last 10 years, which was the longest stretch it had been at any convention.
Mm-hmm.
But going all the way back to 1988, it's been at tons of different conventions. WonderCon, Pittsburgh, Chicago, and so on. But, you know, they're not doing the full Megillah this year at New York, because it was one of those things where, like, we got to get it, now we got it, and we didn't plan for it. We'll do the big ceremony next year.
That's right.
For New York, but who's to say, you know, maybe things will turn around, it'll come back to Baltimore someday.
I don't think so, but because they have the Ringo Awards now.
Oh, that's right. They made up their own awards.
Unless the Ringo Awards jump ship. Like, oh, and would that ever happen? Next, you're going to tell me there's going to be a football team in Las Vegas.
Oh.
Which, by the way, is the plot of Ballers this season, is The Rock trying to get the Raiders to move to Las Vegas, like they didn't realize.
I saw a clip on Facebook of the Rock driving a monster truck, Todd.
Yes, he was in Vegas trying to drum up support for the move football team into Vegas to get some of that political money. Mm-hmm. And he flipped the monster truck, and the crowd went wild, and now they think of him as a Las Vegasan.
He was driving the Max D truck.
You would know better than I would.
Right, which originally was the Goldberg truck.
That's funny.
Yep.
That's like kayfabe there or something.
During that period of time in the late 90s, there was a bunch of WCW trucks. There was a Dungeon of Doom truck, a Hulk Hogan truck, a Sting truck, an NWO truck, mm-hmm. and a Goldberg truck. A lot of them just kind of got like new paint jobs, and kind of just like the Hulk Hogan truck became the Samson truck, and the Sting truck became Stinger, just like painted blue instead of black, like the Crow Sting, right?
They just added ER to right. Sting on the side.
The Goldberg truck was the actually only one that continued on with some sort of prominence. They changed it from Goldberg to Maximum Destruction to now just Max D for short.
Oh, you got the kids like quick, the millennials, they like quick, you know, association with their monster trucks.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Ballers.
Yes.
I forgot that was a thing that you watched.
I do watch Ballers. It's great. Rob Corddry's on. Don't be knocking Rob Corddry.
I know we've had this conversation before. I like Rob Corddry. I like The Rock. I don't know. There's something about Ballers that just rubs me the wrong way.
I'm hoping they have a guest spot by a Robert Wool as Arliss. That would be fantastic.
This is a conversation we've had before, but I'm okay with this because we have new listeners.
Did I say the Arliss thing?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
I think we have pages of the old script mixed in with the new script.
Can you imagine one of the hosts of this show forgetting stuff?
Oh, my God.
That's, like, the worst.
Speaking of which, that's a good enough time for me to plug the soon-to-be-named network at soon-to-be-named-network.com, where you can find any time that this show goes live, if you're not already getting it from the main website, or any time Longbox Heroes After Dark goes live, or any of the other shows in the soon-to-be-named network, whether it be Fresher in Parlance, Profane Arguments, Puzzle Warriors 3, Podvocacy, Paladins of Voltron are coming back as the new season just got released on Netflix, Talking Gimmicks, Prime Defective, Prodigal Sons, these are shows that'll come back someday, and the Aim Down Sights podcast. Anytime any of these shows go live, or anytime that we appear on another podcast somewhere, and they remind me, it'll be up at soon-to-be-named-network.com or soon-to-be-named-network.tumblr.com. And on this week's After Dark, you could hear about the failing state of my mental faculties.
Hmm. Yes.
One thing that you won't hear over there is all the conventions this weekend, Todd.
Ooh, tell me more.
Because there are a couple. Now, I was aghast this past week, Todd. I'm not sure if you saw some of my tweets about this.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I was more aghast that there was a comic book convention in Canada on a Monday.
Mm-hmm.
Or the fact that Canada claimed that Monday was some sort of holiday that I'd never heard of.
I think it was National Geese Day.
Oh my goodness.
And Maple Syrup also.
Geese and Maple Syrup Day?
Yes, it was a double whammy.
I forget what the actual real name of the holiday was, but there were people who were pointing out to me, legislature mm-hmm. that talked about what province this holiday is not celebrated in, and it's not goodness. Celebrated in more than it isn't. Does that make sense?
So you're saying the most of the country doesn't celebrate this, doesn't celebrate Geese and Maple Syrup Day?
Correct.
Right.
Correct. Mm. But it was a convention on a Monday. It destroyed my life.
It did. And I even asked the question, what's worse, a Monday con or a terrible website for a con slash that takes you to Facebook?
Terrible. There was originally 7 conventions to be mentioned in this. Now there's only 3. You want to know why, Todd?
Was it because of their websites?
Either their websites didn't work or it were redirected to a Facebook page that hasn't been updated in months.
My personal favorite is there are actually some giant cons that I click on and it does not tell me where it's at. Like a big name con. And I was I had to go searching. This is in Indianapolis. Okay.
If I can't figure out where your convention is happening from your name, you need to make it very abundantly clear as the at least second thing that I see on your website.
It should be the name of the con, where it's at, and what the date is.
Right.
Those are your 3 important things.
That's the thing. Right. And see, that's the thing. Todd, that's what they teach you in promo class.
Oh, really?
This Sunday night, the Omni, me and Ola Anderson, we're going to take care of those nasty Russians. Who is the match with? Where is it happening? When is it happening? Convention. Mm. What's the convention? Where is it happening? When's it happening?
That's right. Take Spectrox before you do it, too.
That's right, baby. Promo powder by way of the Gallifrey birds. All right. Windsor Comic Con in Windsor, Ontario, Canada is happening this weekend.
And not on a Monday.
Not on a Monday. These first two conventions, of course, we're going to talk about the big name guest and the wrestling guest. Big name guest, Billy D. Williams.
Yes.
Wrestling guest, Jake the Snake Roberts.
Oh, boy. I wonder if he'll have his bag with him.
No, he's on the DDP plan where, well, remind me about that later.
Okay, DDP plan.
And then you would think this is the last one. I always save the big one for last, but no. The Steel City Convention in Pittsburgh. Mick Foley is going to be there.
Ooh.
As is what has to be a rare comic book convention appearance, Burt Reynolds.
Oh, my goodness. He's probably signing those Southern Bastard comics that have him as the car dealer in it.
Right. But the biggie this weekend, Todd, is Boston Comic Con in Boston, Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's how you pronounce it.
They have the best baked beans.
Stan Lee is going to be there.
Okay.
Matthew Smith is going to be there, whoever that is.
Is that an old number 11, Mr. Bowtie?
You're speaking in some sort of code. Is that like a Bob Backlund thing? He wore a bow tie.
Yes, he is the Bob Backlund of Doctor Who.
Oh. Karen Gillan, who played Nebula in the Guardians of the Galaxy movies and nothing else.
And nothing else, you beat me to it.
And nothing else, as far as I know.
Right.
But the biggie, Todd. When I saw this, I got goosebumps. Then I got upset that I'm going to be in Ohio this weekend and I can't drive 6 hours to Boston. They did it once before in Florida earlier this year. But in Boston, Nell Campbell, Patricia Quinn, Barry Bostwick, and Tim Curry. Rocky Horror Picture Show reunion.
Can I make a confession?
Go ahead, Tom.
I've never seen Rocky Horror Picture Show.
That might be something that gets remedied in the next 12 to 18 months.
Why? Am I getting sentenced?
Maybe. But no, again, you know, you don't really get to see Tim Curry too much in public, and he did the Florida convention, which was a big deal. And now that he's doing a second convention, I'm excited. That means Tim Curry is doing well. There was rumors of his failing health. But if he's out there doing conventions, that means he's doing good.
Mm-hmm.
And if Tim Curry's doing good, then I'm doing good.
That's what I like to hear.
Right. You want to make sure that I'm doing okay.
Oh, yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes I think you're a bit fishy, but that's neither here nor there. Okay, Sideshow Bob.
Sideshow Bob, yes. So, moving on to digital sales and freebies. We've got a couple holdover sales from last week with the IDW All Ages stuff and the Titan Crime and Detective stuff. Some of the new ones that got added is Dynamite is having a sale on all of their Shadow stuff. I think there's some new Shadow book that's being released this week, so that's in conjunction with that. Marvel is having a sale on Jessica Jones stuff, and it's essentially just the original Alias series. Whether you want to get the four trades for $20, or you want to get the 28 issues that are collected in that those trades for $28, I don't know why you would want to spend an extra $8 to get single issues when they're offering the same thing at the different price, but hey, I'm not going to say what you should do with your money, but I should say if you are going to spend it on this, you certainly should, because Alias is a really good book.
Yes, it is. Jesse Jones is the best.
Oh, my goodness. And DC is having a sale on Jack Kirby stuff. We were talking about Jack Kirby a little bit earlier on in the show. It's a lot of Mr. Miracle stuff for some reason.
Hmm. Wonder why.
The original series from the 70s, the second series from the late 80s, another series that I don't think he had anything to do with because I think Jack may have passed by the mid to late 90s. OMAC is in there, Forever People, New Gods, Todd's favorite, and the... Seven Soldiers, Mr. Miracle book, which, if I remember correctly, isn't too bad. Even though it's written by Todd's friend, Grant Morrison.
Friend of the show, Grant Morrison.
Friend of the show, avid listener and commenter, Grant Morrison. So that's a bunch of stuff that we've talked about. No new freebies. Those were updated as of last week, and those have not changed. Todd, let's get into what we read from this past week.
Okay.
I'll let you kick things off.
I'm going to say we start with Generations Hulk, Totally Awesome Hulk, and Banner Hulk,
yes.
Written by Greg Pak, and wait for the artist's name, Matteo Bufagani?
I say that's close enough.
I say it's close enough either. Basically, Amadeus shows Hulk, the Totally Awesome Hulk, appears in the past somehow. And we never really do find out how. And he meets the Banner Hulk, who's fighting General Thunderbolt Ross. And the book is, you know, them fighting for a bit because there's a misunderstanding when two heroes meet. Shocking. And it goes on, and we get to see Amadeus Cho really start to see what Banner's life as the Hulk is. And what, because Cho looks at being the Hulk as a pro thing, where basically Banner's like, this is a curse. And as the book goes on, Cho starts to see what that is and starts to finally realize maybe it's a bad thing for him. And I want to see, like, I'm not getting all the Generations books, but I'm getting some of them. And I want to see if they're all going to play out like this and we're going to find out a bigger mystery behind it as to how Cho showed up there and stuff like that. But I'm definitely interested in where these Generation books are going, and I enjoyed this one because I'm reading Totally Awesome Hulk by Greg Pak, so I'm looking forward to some of the other ones that are on my list.
Right, because this is one, you know, we had discussed it here, that this is a book that I'm picking up because it's a book that I already get, Totally Awesome Hulk, and it's written by the writer of that book. So, in my opinion, it fits right in, and the Weapons of Mutant Destruction book has not finished yet, so I was like, oh, where's this going to fit in? And this is kind of like its own thing, and I'm not getting all of the books like Todd mentioned, I'm just getting the ones that are of the books that I currently read by the creative teams that are currently doing said books. So, I noticed in some trade dress, in some ad copy...
Mm-hmm.
That they're claiming that this Generations thing is a 10-issue miniseries.
How many are there off the top of your head?
There are 10.
Okay.
So I thought this was just a series of one-shots. But obviously it is going to be some sort of overarching story.
I always kind of thought that, but I was hoping that it wouldn't be totally necessary to read them all. And I'm hoping that's what it is, but I always kind of had a feeling that there was going to be an overarching something. So, what's the last one, do you know?
Well, it's difficult to say because of the way that they're solicited.
Right.
They're supposed to be solicited 2 a week for the 5 weeks of August. but I think there are some books that are already running late.
Right, because wasn't there only one Generations book last week?
Right, there was. It was the two, if you remember, when they did the sale last week, mm-hmm. the Generations sale was like Thor books, Hulk books, and Phoenix books.
Mm-hmm.
Leading us to believe that those were the ones that were supposed to be coming out. And I know the Phoenix one comes out this week.
But it's the only one, right?
Right, and that's the only one.
So we're already behind by two books.
Yes. And they were all, it was supposed to be 10 issues in the month of August. Now I'm looking here.
Hopefully they'll add two more on the end. It'll be a 12 issue series.
It looks like there's one in the third week.
They had a better ending for Generations.
Oh boy. There's none on the fourth week. But we may have discussed this before. Marvel's website may not be the best for figuring out when books come out. Now, the rest of them are all jumbled up into the first week of September. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 of them that are currently scheduled to come out the first week of September.
Generations. Here it is all at once.
Oh, my goodness.
And told out of order.
And again, I would assume that there's going to be no reading order. I would assume that this is all just going to lead in to whatever that legacy one-shot is.
Mm-hmm.
But we shall see. You know, there's a couple of them that I am getting. There's the Spider-Man one, the Thor one, and I think that's about it.
I think the only one that I'm really getting that I don't read is the Captain Marvel one, just because it has the old Captain Marvel, who I'm a big mark for. So, but everything else is whether I'm reading the books or not. So,
but it was good. It was a light, fun issue. Maybe a little bit too light for its $5 price tag.
Mm-hmm.
But it was still good. I enjoyed it. I like the Hulk, and I like Totally Awesome Hulk.
But it was only $4.99, Joe. It wasn't $5.
Right, and with my discount and then with tax, it's like mm-hmm. $4.24.
Tags, and insurance. Because mm-hmm. you buy bags and boards, so that's insurance.
On-site grading.
Oh, you're grading on me. That's on-site grading.
Oh, write down grading.
Writing down grading. It's right under DDP plan.
All right. This is one I don't want to tell on the air because I think this would be a good one that I don't want to. A lot of times I have ideas that are pretty bad and I say them on the air, but this is one that I actually think is really good.
So you're telling me I should stop blurting out what I think are my really good ideas on the show?
When you have one, I'll let you know. I'll cut it out.
Now you're grading.
Yeah, there you go. Let's move on to Jessica Jones number 11.
Mm-hmm.
It's the middle of a storyline, and I only put this one on here because written by Brian Michael Bendis with art by Michael Gatos and Javier Pulido.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the Javier Pulido stuff that I want to talk about. So okay. They do a flashback about this file that Jessica Jones gets. So she has been hired by Maria Hill, Jessica Jones, pronouns pal, had a big falling out with S.H.I.E.L.D. in the previous story arc. Now Maria Hill comes to her and says, you need to find out who's trying to kill me. There's life model decoy stuff. There's all the sorts of S.H.I.E.L.D. stuff that happens, right?
Mm-hmm.
So when Jessica Jones gets the file, she gives it to Maria Hill. Maria Hill reads the file. We flash back to whatever the file talks about. And it's done in an old Marvel 60s-style spy book.
Right, and the panel layouts, like the old Steranko stuff
yes.
from the S.H.I.E.L.D. era.
Yes, and that was something that Bendis would kind of always play with in, you know, stuff like Powers and Scarlet and other stuff that he was doing. And I think this is the first time in quite some time that he's got a chance to play with that in one of his books. And I think the fact that this is a Marvel book, but I don't even think that Marvel Max is a thing, but this does have a giant box on the book that says Parental Advisory Not for Kids.
Mm-hmm.
Which is a good thing to have on the book. But I really enjoyed that. I liked, you know, I really enjoyed this book. I think Bendis is at his strongest when he's doing a book like this that has less superhero stuff and more crime stuff. More right. solving a mystery sort of stuff. And you want to throw superheroes in there, that works. But I think this is Bendis at his best. And when he gets to play with different tropes, different styles, different looks, I think that helps a lot as well.
Now, I just want to talk for a second about the Javier Pulido section of the book. I'm not a big Javier Pulido guy.
Right.
I'm not a fan of this stuff usually. This works for me, but my favorite little bit is this Strange Tales in the bottom, because it's like taken up like an old Strange Tales comic is published by Marvel Fun Publications Incorporated. Office of publication is 625 Madison Avenue, New York, which is the old Marvel address. Back in the day, because they're at a different place now.
Right.
And I just like little nods like that, especially. That make me laugh out loud, especially. Like, if it had a letters page with Uncle Elvis, I'd be like you just nailed everything.
Hit all of the things that Todd loves about old comics.
That's right. TM Maple and stuff like that.
And, you know, and obviously Maria Hill reads it, and then there's a really good cliffhanger at the end of this.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we've talked about the Jessica Jones book before, and, you know, I just wanted to kind of bring it up as mentioned because of the little art change that they do with the storytelling in the middle. But this is a really good book. If for some reason you've kind of soured on Bendis for whatever reason, I highly recommend the Jessica Jones book. And, you know, that's why I was kind of like, hey, the old Alias stuff is on sale too. That's some really good comics there as well.
That's right. And in this issue, you find out what Life Model Decoys can and cannot do.
Mm-hmm.
And if you want to find that out, you have to read the book.
In public, if you will.
That's right.
Yes. So the last book that we're going to be discussing, and by we I mean me, is going to be Unstoppable Wasp number 8. With all the books and reboots and everything else that's going on at Marvel, sadly, this is one of a very small handful of books that is not getting a new renumbering, that is essentially just being canceled. Written by Jeremy Whitley with art by Ted Brandt, this is a really good, is and has been a really good, fun comic book.
Mm-hmm.
This is a book that I think the people who may have turned their nose up at Kamala Khan, Miss Marvel stuff, any other stuff that may have felt manufactured to be toward a teen girl audience. I did read the first, I would say, like three trades of the Kamala Khan stuff, and I liked it, didn't love it, it was still good. This I really, really enjoyed. They do a lot of fun stuff with the characters. They do a lot of fun stuff with getting different people in the book. The female Beetle is in this book. Whirlwind is in this book. All sorts of really weird characters. Jarvis is great in this book. And this issue is, you know, it's only 8 issues, so the whole thing can be read in one fell swoop. And I think they did the first 4 issues as a super cheap trade, which if you go to, you know, your local store, if they have it in stock, they can probably do like whatever the discount a lot of places will do on an older trade or whatever it is. But I'm sure they'll probably collect all 8 issues together, and I really recommend this book. I think a lot of people missed out on this, but the last 2 issues of this were Nadia Wasp, Hank Pym's daughter, half Russian. She was off in the Red Room, the same training that Black Widow had.
Okay.
Once they figured out she was smart, they put her in the science part of it as opposed to the killing part of it. And she gets out, she comes here to the United States, she's trying to become an American citizen, trying to kind of put that past her, the killing part of her life, trying to use her science knowledge for betterment, trying to find other people like her, not just science people, but also young teenage girls who are also very good at science, getting them together to work together. She's all, you know, this unbridled enthusiasm. And these other girls are, you know, they're in a world where, you know, being very good at science as a teenager isn't the most cool thing in the world, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then you get, like, superhero fights, and you get big monster battles. Mockingbird is in this. Janet Van Dyne, the Wasp, the original Wasp, shows up in end of issue 6. Issue 7 and 8 are more her stories, and it's more her being the stepmother of Nadia, helping her and becoming a family. I can't stress to you enough, this is a really good book. I'm sad to see it go. And I just want to kind of mention it on the show. I think I might have talked about the first issue when it came out because I was really much looking forward to it. Mm-hmm. And now that it's over, I'm sad.
All things. And, you know, hopefully we'll get an FF book out of this.
Well, I don't know if we're going to get an FF book. I know Nadia is very entangled with the Mark Waid stuff. Mm-hmm. You know, his Avengers stuff, his Champion stuff. And I know Jeremy Whitley co-wrote some of the Avengers stuff.
Right.
So if whatever's going on with Mark Waid, you know, he's still solicited to be writing Avengers and Champions going forward. But if Whitley ends up taking over the reins on one of those books or co-writing one of those books and he still gets to write Nadia, I think that'll be really cool. Because I think he really got the character. And, like, you could tell he was brought on to write those or co-write or whatever it was, the issues of Avengers and Champions that she appeared in, to get her voice when she was the main focus of those stories.
Gotcha.
Like, I don't know, were you still reading Avengers or no?
No, I dropped out of Avengers.
So, there was a 2 or 3 issue story arc where Dr. Doom Iron Man shows up.
Okay.
And he shows up, and he's all bravado. Because he's, you know, even though he's Iron Man, he's still Dr. Doom. And the Avengers, your Spider-Mans, your Sam Wilsons, your Thors, Hercules, they're all like, hey, you're Dr. Doom. You know, they're on their guard. She is like, oh my god, you're Dr. Doom. You're like the best scientist around.
Mm-hmm.
So she sees out for him.
She sees things a different way.
Right. And there's like all sorts of different things. And Doom comes up because there's a whole like witches coven that are posing at like the summer camp. And she's the only one who can infiltrate it because, you know, it's science stuff. It's, you know, teenagers, all that sort of stuff. And there's a part where he calls her, like, you know, because Doom is like Richards and Stark and Parker and, you know, and Doom calls her by her first name.
Wow.
Right.
That's like familiarity, and it makes me like the character when you call him by their first name.
There you go. And it's a thing because Doom doesn't call people by their first name.
No, I know.
I'm like, okay, that was such a cool touch, and they address it in the book. Like, Parker's like, Spider-Man's like, he goes, I don't even know if Dr. Doom knows my first name. You know, so it's stuff like that. Like, I really think that Nadia is a really good character. And obviously, you know, she's just another growing, shrinking character. Giant Man, Pym, Wasp, and all that sort of stuff. But I really think she's a good character. And I hope she gets more to do in the coming years at Marvel.
If I had known Dr. Doom got her over, maybe I would have read the book.
Dr. Doom gave her the rub.
Oh, boy.
And
passing the torch.
It was one of those deals where he didn't lose any of his overness.
Mm-hmm.
By giving a youngster the rub.
Wow.
So that's what we read this week, Todd. Let's get into what we're looking forward to reading next week. Last week, this week. If you head over to longboxheroes.com every Tuesday around 5:30 Eastern time or so, we put up the poll post, which is a link to all the books that are coming out this week. Whether you get your books in print, whether you get them digitally, whether you get them in trade, whether you get them in hardcover, whether you get them mailed to your house, however it is that you get your books, know what's coming out, be forewarned and be forearmed, be ready for your books. The two things that Todd and I are attempting to do this year, one is guess what the other is most looking forward to coming out this week. Two is keeping track of what books we have purchased by number and breaking that number out by publisher. I am way in the lead because I am getting way, way, way more books than Todd because I have no self-control and comic books are my only vice.
Only?
Pretty much.
Okay.
If I spent on comic books when I spent on other things, then I have a problem.
That is true.
So I do want to say this one caveat, Todd. As mm-hmm. you look at what, because you started the show, so you go first.
Right.
We are striking Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, from the list.
Okay.
Because that is a book that came out
3 weeks ago.
3 weeks ago.
according to your, you know, text up there at the top of the post.
And somehow I missed it. I just thought it was late. Somehow it slipped through my purview.
Wasn't it? Didn't we not get enough at the shop or something, maybe?
If we didn't, no one told me that.
All right, no, okay, I don't know.
And that's the thing. I say in the post, I could lay the blame for this at many people's feet, but at the end of the day, I screwed up.
Okay.
And when I figured that out the other day, I think that's been the reason for my downward spiral over the last several days.
Wow. So I will take Peter Parker, Spectacular Spider-Man, off my... That was the one I was going to pick, thank God. You,
oh, okay, good.
Near miss. So, looking over your list, I'm going to go the book you're looking forward to most is Mr. Miracle Number 1 by Tom King.
I would say that's also the book you're looking forward to as well, Todd.
Oh my God, what universe do we live in where a New Gods book is the book I'm looking forward to most?
It's the book where Tom King writes it.
That's right. Listen, Marvel, keep plugging away on those Inhuman books, because someday it might be the book that I'm looking forward to most in this section of the show.
Instead of whoever they have writing four of the seven Inhumans books, maybe if they just get Tom King to write one of them, it might sell.
Wow.
Hey, listen, ooh, Todd, there was an early draft of the show notes that had all the information about that TV conference this past weekend with all the Inhuman stuff.
With the well-lit Medusa?
Okay. The book that Todd and I are both looking forward to is coming out. It's Mr. Miracle.
Right.
I'm wildly waving my hands as I say this.
What? You crazed? Never.
The scale is tipping, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
When I do anything in entertainment, and I've mentioned this on the show before, whether it be TV or movies or comic books or professional wrestling, I want either really, really good or really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
Don't give me the middle.
Right.
Don't give me something that's ticking a box, filling a quota, putting out to fulfill a contract.
Right.
Give me your all, or your all is so bad that I cannot look away.
Mm-hmm. You want the car crash or the, you know, the man landing on the moon? It's right. One or the other.
The scale is starting to tip, Todd.
Mm-hmm.
I now may be interested in the Inhumans thing.
Right.
Whatever it is. Like, if you said to me right now, the IMAX is tomorrow, we're going, I'm going.
Okay, I'll keep that in mind.
Because it's not coming out for, what, another 3 weeks?
So there could be more gas on this fire?
Right, or they could start putting the fire out.
Right, so if they add more gas, it's going to be like, Todd, we're going.
It's
going
to be a beacon to me. I'll pre-order the tickets.
Oh my goodness. IMAX Inhumans. See that barely lit Medusa on the big screen.
This will be the first IMAX thing I see.
Wow.
Because I don't count the Harry Potter movie that I paid for and fell asleep through.
That's right.
My physical form was there.
But you were on the astral plane.
That's right.
You were in the dreaming with Morpheus.
Actually, Sleepwalker came to pay me a visit. You know, Sandman done right.
Oh my goodness. Is that like 52 done right with Countdown?
Did you see my tweet about Swamp Thing the other day? Speaking of Sandman, but speaking of Sandman?
Yeah, some dirty wrestler got turned on to Swamp Thing.
Not just some dirty wrestler.
Right.
So, Tony Schiavone, commentator of World Championship Wrestling, Monday Nitro, the king of hyperbole. Tonight is the greatest moment in the history of our sport.
The anchor of the commentating desk
the
for
anchor
WCW.
Of the commentating desk. He's the one who, with the tape Nitro, granted it wasn't his decision to say, when Mick Foley won the world title, they gave away the results ahead of time. And he says, I hear on that other program they're putting the belt on Mick Foley, who used to wrestle here as Cactus Jack. snicker. That'll put some butts in seats.
Mm-hmm.
And over 500,000 people changed the channel from Nitro. They could like that was the day when ratings were a thing, and they could specifically pinpoint that remark caused 500,000 people to stop watching Nitro
and flick over to WWE.
Yes, but Tony Schiavone, with his podcast, we're learning he's a Renaissance man. He's he does baseball commentary for the Braves farm team. He's a lover of musical theater. And through Raven, who you know better as Scotty Flamingo.
I know that guy. Best bird name ever.
Scotty Flamingo turned him on to reading Swamp Thing comics. Oh, and he's like, oh, I'm a big comic book fan. I was blown away. Tony Schiavone, Renaissance man.
Oh, you know, he's in wrestling, but he likes comics, so I guess that evens out.
Right. They like, can't all be great.
That's right. You gotta have your flaws.
This is the most haphazard episode of Longbox Heroes we've ever done.
I beg to differ. We probably have done worse, and we will do worse. That's my pledge to you.
Alright, thank you. So, head over to longboxheroes.com, and you could find everything that we've ever done on the internet, whether it be past editions of this show, past editions of After Dark, past Todd and Joe Have Issues, past pull posts, anything that we've ever done on the internet, it exists there. And Todd, I understand there's something new there, at least now, that hasn't been there for the last several months.
That's right. It's time for the ESPN Pigskin Pick'ems with Longbox Heroes. You want to pick the winners of football games against two comic book podcasters, the fans. We will probably even have the definitive KFC Colonel Sanders artist joining in. So what more could you possibly want? So get in there and join up or rejoin if you've already played. And I'm curious if you're changing up how you're doing the picks this year.
Because last year I had Asa pick them.
All right, and you tape them apparently at the end of the show. I'd know if I listened. But, and I was wondering if you were going to do this again or you were going to try some new method and I don't know. Have maybe like April pick the teams. I don't know. Something.
I don't know. I'll have to check with Asa to see if he wants to do this.
Mm-hmm. Because I know the kid's flighty. He might not remember doing it and stuff like that. So he might be onto something new.
Right.
But. So you figure that out if he wants to do it, and then if not, I'm curious to like what, you know, gimmick, as you guys who like the grapple like to say, what it's going to be.
So am I correct in seeing that we already have 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20 people already involved?
Okay, wasn't that 20 when I last looked, but that's...
Well, I just added myself.
Oh, did you just add yourself?
Yes.
Wow. So I'm looking now. I'm going to see. Yes, I guess if you say there's 20 people, that's like 18, including me and you.
Now, I do see that someone in here is calling themselves words. Now, that's not me.
You have two in here? Joe, come on. That's not fair.
Yeah, one's the dummy account.
Wow.
Well, I don't even know what to say.
I think that's you. Are you? Did you put a words account? Oh my goodness! You're typing in the background.
Yes.
As it flies off into the ether.
I'm being chastised for not liking certain people's tweets.
Uh-oh. Oof. You like, that's what I don't understand, why you don't check my tweets at least 5 times a day. I get all my likes shortly before we tape on a Tuesday night.
So didn't you have some sort of question?
How are you going to do the picks? There's your question. See, I worked it in there seamlessly, Joe.
I got to check with Asa to see if he wants to do it.
There you go. Keep me abreast of the situation.
Maybe.
Okay.
I thought you were going to, like, actually have a legitimate, like, quiz or something for me.
No, like, relax. Like, you think I think that out far enough in advance?
I might just go in there and just
do
say,
the whole year?
Like, and just randomly pick, like, half the roster, right?
Mm-hmm.
And just say, I'm picking them to win the whole season.
Mm-hmm.
I'm picking half the teams to go undefeated the entire season.
And the other half to go winless?
The other half to go winless.
Wow.
I don't know. I don't know how serious I'm going to take this.
Why don't you take it serious, like the way I take wrestling?
There you go. There you go.
Mm-hmm.
So be sure to sign up for that. It's a lot of fun. We all make fun of me for being stupid for 16 weeks.
17.
Oh, 17.
Because there's 16 games, but there's bye weeks.
Oh,
I'll explain it all to you when we're off the air.
Bronco Nagurski never had a bye week.
He probably did, but...
And be sure while you're over at Longbox Heroes to click out our store. I have it on very good authority. It works now.
I got on top of that.
That's right. Thankfully, we have the best tech guy in the biz.
Mm-hmm.
But also, if you do not want to purchase a shirt or a sticker from us, of course, you can click our Amazon banner across the top of the page. Cost you nothing extra, and anything that you purchase through our Amazon click-through, we get a couple cents on the back end, and every little bit helps, of course. And you get that once-a-month tweet from Todd saying, cha-ching, and that's how you know everything is doing okay. People are buying books through Amazon. Remember when Amazon was just a bookseller, Todd?
I do remember that.
Does anyone remember laughter? So someone purchased the Athlete's Book of Home Remedies.
Ooh.
Someone also purchased the Remembrance of Things Past, Swan's Way and Within a Budding Grove.
Okay.
But most notably, Todd, someone purchased a Midwest Curious Cat Cube / Cat House / Cat Condo.
Oh, my goodness.
They're doing a lot. I don't know what's going on. That's going to be one fancy cat living in that house / condo / cube.
That's big living for the cat.
He won't be curious for long, I guess. I don't know. But thank you, everyone, for all of your purchases through the Amazon click-through. And if you've purchased a shirt or a sticker, in the last several weeks or whenever it was, we thank you as well. So last bit of business, of course, before we get into Todd and Joe Have Issues, was there any Todd's Art Attack this week?
Nope, not this week.
Mm-hmm. Sadly. So again, the call goes out. If you're going to a convention, if you've gone to a convention recently, if you've contacted someone through their private page or however it is that you purchase art, let Todd know. He's still trying to figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
If you've gotten like a page of something, a sketch, a commission, if you yourself am a budding artist and want to draw a picture of Todd needling me about football stuff, by all means, tweet it at us and include Todd's Art Attack Twitter in there, and we'll retweet it and share it with the world.
I'd love to see that.
Right. All right, so Todd and Joe Have Issues. Birds of Prey number 8. Written by Chuck Dixon, with art by Greg Land. So this is a one-off issue where Dick Grayson takes Barbara to the circus, Barbara Gordon. And this is, how would I put this? A weird time in DC, where it was late 90s, early 2000s, but everyone was still being drawn, at least the men, like it was the early to mid 90s.
Mm-hmm.
Especially their hair.
What? You love hair.
Dick Grayson had some questionable hair choices in this, is all I'm saying.
Wig working comics.
Right. So a lot of stuff with, of course, Dick making the trek from Bloodhaven, where he was, quote-unquote, the Batman of... to Gotham City, and he owned Haley's Circus at the time, the same circus he was a part of as a child, where his parents were murdered. Of course, you know, family issues there. And this is during a time where Barbara is still in the wheelchair. She's still Oracle. And we are many, many, many years away from any sort of hint of her ever being Batgirl again.
Mm-hmm.
And there's also a period of time where they are in their won't they phase. They are not a couple. They're just friends.
Mm-hmm.
Not the fantastic R double movie either.
Oh, great movie. Anna Faris, I feel sorry
for you. Why are they dancing? Anyway. So what did you think of this?
Confession, first time I've ever read it. I have a big gap in my Birds of Prey reading. The only time I really read it religiously was when Gail Simone was writing it.
Sure.
I was a big Chuck Dixon fan. I don't know why I wasn't reading this at the time, but I loved it. I love the whole interaction between Dick and Barbara. This was some of the stuff that I really missed about the old DC universe and, like, to me, what New 52 robbed us of for a while. And we're getting back to Rebirth. But this issue had heart. It was the whole thing of, like, Dick and Barbara on a night out, which wasn't a date and turned into a date. The best way I can describe this is the dialogue, like, take away the dialogue about superheroes fighting, and to me, it's two characters doing realistic dialogue out on a date, and that to me is the measure, like, of a great moment like this in comics with, you know, characters. You can relate to the non-superhero-y stuff. And that's the way I look at this. I really love to see him talk about, like, their lives, and then when they get to, like, what she misses and everything. It was really good. And in the end, I was sad that they went their separate ways. And there's that great quote where Barbara says, you know, the reason I don't have handles on the back of my wheelchair is because I don't like being pushed, Grayson. And I'm like, that was fantastic. And I forgot just how good Chuck Dixon could be at the height of, like, his era. Just some really good stuff. And Greg Land, like I said, there's some wonky stuff with the hairdos and stuff like that. But I've always been a sucker for Greg Land's art. People badmouth him, but I enjoy him.
Well, this is pre-photo reference Greg Land.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You could see a little bit of a creep in on a couple.
Right.
Yeah, a couple shots, but he was a really good artist.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm with you. This was during a time where I was reading Birds of Prey. But I was feverishly reading the solicitations that any time there was any sort of Dick Grayson, Barbara Gordon interaction, I was buying it. Because
mm-hmm.
I really, really enjoyed the way that it was being handled. And this was at a time where Chuck Dixon was writing a lot of the ancillary Bat books. So if it was something with them in another Bat book, it was more than likely written by Chuck Dixon. And this is a great time for him.
Right.
And the other thing is, and this is not a knock on him, and again, take this for what you will, a Chuck Dixon book is kind of a breezy read, where you could crank out a Chuck Dixon book in like 5 minutes,
mm-hmm.
and not feel as though you were ripped off and feel as though you got a full story.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that says to the mastery of his storytelling.
Right.
And not really tons and tons of exposition. He wasn't really a huge dialogue guy. That would kind of become the thing maybe about like 5 years, 6 years after this book was published. But still a really good issue. And I recommend any of the Chuck Dixon stuff from this era, whether it be the Birds of Prey stuff, the Nightwing stuff, Robin, I think he was doing at the time. Mm-hmm. All of that stuff is great. You should check it out wherever you can. You could probably find it real cheap. Like that. This is absolute, like for the most part, like a few key issues like this one might be a little bit tough to come by.
Mm-hmm.
But you can get like huge chunks of these runs for quarters.
Right. This is an expensive issue. But the thing I liked about Chuck Dixon was Chuck Dixon was pretty much the go-to Bat family guy back in the day.
Right.
If there was a Bat book, he was probably writing it. And then like I always found it amusing because I wonder what happened to him. Because, like, he talks about how he was, like, a conservative, like, political guy, and maybe some of that came into play with the hiring and stuff like that. But, you know, he says one of the things that I like about him was when the final Batman, the Nolan Batman movie came out, and he was like, love Bane, got a big check for it. Yeah. So as long as he's cashing that Bane money, I'm happy for him. Remind me to mention something about Chuck Dixon off the air.
You write that down for yourself.
Right. I'm writing it down as right.
I don't take notes.
What? You don't do takes? Double takes?
Listen. Who are you anyway?
Can I talk to Mrs. Robinson?
Can I speak with Ms. Robinson, please? See, because if I have a pen in my hand, I'm doing this the whole show.
Oh, I know. You're loud.
I'm loud and fidgety. A great combination.
You know what? We got to get you a fidget spinner.
Oh, they're all over my house.
What? Are you saying a child loves fidget spinners?
Yes.
But anyway.
So, Todd, what are we doing next week?
We're dipping into another character that we've already done once before. We're going into Swamp Thing 45, which is the take on the Winchester House, if you remember the story. You know the Winchester House?
I do.
Well, this is the take. I forget what the name, because it's been a while since I read it. The name of the gun, so they don't get sued. But basically, that's the take on the story. And I remember loving this story back in the day, and just remembering it because I was intrigued by the story of the Winchester House. And reading this later, I just thought it was all cool and came together. So I really enjoyed this issue of Swamp Thing.
And if I remember correctly, this is, you know, obviously a certainly one and done. There was a whole bunch of stories in that little trade where they're more or less their own thing.
I hope so, because I remember this being around the time that Crisis was going on. Mm-hmm. And Swamp Thing being one of those books that people forget how heavily that book tied into Crisis when it all came about with like John Constantine. He's like, what he was prepping the Swamp Thing for was Crisis on Infinite Earths, and it's weird in a pre-Vertigo book that that's what it would be if that made, you know what I'm trying to say?
Right.
It was like very weird, but I remember it being a big part because the mystical stuff played a big part in the Crisis book. Remember when the Spectre arm wrestled the Anti-Monitor for the universe? So.
I'll have to ask Tony Schiavone if he remembers reading this issue.
Over the top.
All right.
But arm wrestled for the fate of the universe.
Yes.
That's a Sylvester Stallone movie about arm wrestling. I don't know if you ever saw it.
Of course I did. Terry Funk's in it.
Ugh, now I remember why I didn't like it.
All right, so next week, Swamp Thing number 45. Todd, is there anything else that I've missed? And I really mean that because I'm not really sure anymore.
No, I know you're punchy. No, we're good, though.
All right, so for Todd, this is Joe, closing out episode 358 of Longbox Heroes, and we will catch you all here next week.
Remember, be a faucet, not a drain.
Boo!